Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Turn with Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Continuing our conversation with Eric Peters of EricPetersAutos.com. Absolutely right. And of course, a little drop of history here. That's what made Rush Limbaugh huge when at the end of the Reagan administration, the FCC dropped again the Orwellianly titled so-called fairness doctrine that the FCC had imposed for so long and driven opinions off the radio. Because, as you know, if they're creating the tragedy of the commons in radio, saying you've got to be open to everything, what's going to happen? You're going to get nothing. You're going to get absolute drivel, gruel for the brain. That's all it's going to be. And that's exactly what we see in schools. Anything the government touches gets everybody arguing about how it's going to be run, as you know. You get the tragedy of the commons, and then they start driving away all the good stuff. That's the way it works for healthcare, because you can't get everything that you want. That's the way it works for land. That's the way it works for agencies. That's the way it works for schools. And this is exactly the same thing. If they impose another sort of so-called fairness doctrine, they will see opinions driven off the air, and they'll apply it to the internet, which is exactly what they want to do. And in a way, I think what they're really attempting to do here is make it very, very tricky and start getting corporations to do it themselves.
Sure. And what's going to happen, I think, in a broad sense, is what happened in the old Soviet Union and the countries of Eastern Europe during the Soviet era, which was that everything that was good went underground. They had something in the East Bloc called the samizdat. You know, that was the underground press, which was distributed by hand, you know, under the table, because everybody knew the Pravda, you know, the official organ of the Soviet ruling apparat, which meant truth, was falsehood. Everybody knew that. And in order to find any truth, you had to read these subversive underground publications. That's what's happening now. And in order to get good things, like, you know, if you want raw milk, you kind of have to go, you know, wink, nod, find somebody who's willing to sell it to you illegally under the table. And, you know, that's what's happening. It's the inversion of everything. Like, the state corrupts everything that it touches such that honest people end up having to become technically under the law outlaws in order to function.
And I'll just say again, you know, it incentivizes not only the black market, but it fools people into thinking they're being protected, just like the FDA does when it block certain things, which if they, that there's a great book that Robert Higgs edited for the Independent Institute years ago called Hazardous to Our Health. And in it, they have different essays about how many lives have been lost because the FDA caused such delays for products that if we were free, we could have tried them or not tried them. We could have listened to our doctors or not.
Just like with the FDA. Who runs the FDA?
Yeah.
The pharmaceutical companies run the FDA.
Exactly. Exactly. So ivermectin, I was talking with a guy a little bit earlier around my area. I was out a little bit earlier. I said, how you doing? And he said, oh, you know, I was like, you know, I've been having some problems with headaches and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, I get a little tired out and stuff. And he said, oh, yeah, you know, that with COVID, that's what happened to me. He said, you know, I was like, well, you know, if you ever have a problem in the future, just remember, get some ivermectin. And he goes, what's ivermectin? I was like, well, ivermectin was the stuff that was, it could have been used for parallel use, but they wouldn't allow it because they, if they had allowed it, they couldn't have the jabs out there, the mRNA jabs under the emergency use stuff to be protected and so on by their dumb protections against liability. He goes, oh, wow. And I was like, yeah. So I gave him some websites and stuff like that. I was like, you know, have it on hand. You know, if you can't get ivermectin, get some prednisone. Take that as an anti-inflammatory real quick. Get your quercetin, get your zinc. And it's amazing to see that this insulates people into thinking they're being protected. And then they will define, again, what is safe driving, what is not safe driving. We can't test these things. They won't let us. You remember that example, Eric, I think we spoke about this, where the folks at the Reason Foundation brought their cars out on the 404 or something like that out in around L.A. and they all went at exactly the speed limit.
Yep.
And it caused absolute mayhem. People were going in the breakdown lanes trying to get around them. And they had to stop because they realized they were putting people's lives in danger. So we can see already that the state is not conforming to what is natural to the people who are actually using the thing, the road.
Well, what's natural is learning what works and learning what doesn't. One size does not fit all. We're individuals and we have different capacities. We have different frailties, different strengths. So what, you know, as we grow up as kids, we learn, we explore, we find out, you know, we apply reason and logic and experience so that we can make sense of the world. They're attempting to deprive us of that and treat us as if we're all essentially NPCs, you know, non-playable characters, the same widget. No difference. We're all the same and one size fits all. And don't question it. Don't do anything differently. Wait to be told what to do. Defer to authority. Authority knows best.
You remind me, Eric, of, and this is some spoilers for people who haven't read 1984. Of course, the big battle is the battle of wills between O'Brien and Winston Smith, the protagonist. And O'Brien, of course, looking like he's a friend for Winston Smith and then revealing that he's not. He's a torturer and he's suckered Winston Smith to reveal himself. And then they bring him into the torture room and they constantly say, how many fingers am I holding up? What's 2 plus 2? You know, that's the theme. When we say that 2 plus 2 is 5, we know that when you agree with us, we know we've won. You have to believe it. You will believe it. And in a way, what we've got here, as horrific as that was for people who were reading that at the time, I read it in 1983, 84. We graduated. I graduated high school in 84. So it was a big deal for us. You know, that date itself was big. And, but what's interesting is this is a very soft sort of, you know, people often say, is it more like Aldous Huxley or is it like Orwell? Yeah, in a way, it's both, as you know, most people probably in liberty circles understand that. But in a way, what we're seeing here is they already, their mindset already assumes that we can't take care of ourselves. It sees us either as daft and stupid or as the enemy of what they think is the safest, best world. It goes, it, you know, it's all the technocratic view. It's the Masonic and, you know, Illuminatus view that they're the enlightened ones. It's the Klaus Schwabians. It's all of those control freaks who want to impose on us their eugenics world, only have the best and so on. The best for all of us, as they say. And what's fascinating is that their assumption that people can't control themselves has now been embraced by so many people who think these parts of the machine, these apparatus, as you say, will operate fine. They're the machine that will continue to operate and they don't have to have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. And it's very troubling to me to see that people have accepted their fate in this way. And it doesn't have to be their fate. It's being imposed on them. They're being turned into sheep.
But it's been imposed on them in the most devilishly and subtle way imaginable, such that they don't even have any awareness of it. You know, you and I, people our age and older, have something to compare the present with that was very different than the present.
Yeah, yeah.
The crowd that has grown up, say, in the last 30 years, they grew up in a very different world. They did not have the comparison. And think about just something like the experience of flying commercially.
Right.
You know, they have no memory of a time when you could just go to an airport at the last minute, literally.
Yeah.
You know, go up
right,
to the counter
right.
and pay cash for a ticket without showing an ID and then go running to the gate and just get on the airplane. It's an unimaginable thing to them. They have grown up with the experience of the way it is now. So for them, that's normal. You and I have talked before about how kids who grew up in the safety seat era grew up conditioned to regard cars as dangerous and that the natural state of things is to be passive, to sit in a seat, strapped
right,
in.
Right,
you know,
right,
to
don't right,
jump
right.
in a car and, hey, this is fun. This is freeing. You know, this is actually cloistering and suffocating and controlling. And,
right.
and it's cool. They tell kids, you know, if somebody hits you, you know, bully comes up and punches you in the nose, you don't defend yourself. There's zero tolerance. You know, you go, you know, go crying to the teacher and go to the principal and then they'll take care of it. You know,
they're
fostering impotence and dependence and infantilism. They don't want competent people. And this gets into the maliciousness of it. It's not that they are benevolent and think that we're just so stupid and so helpless that we need their wise guidance, their helping hand. It's malicious. They have contempt for us.
Yes,
us. They look upon us as cattle. You know, cattle to be led to the abattoir, ultimately.
And it's interesting because at the same time that we hear the word pride, you know, tossed around like so much confetti, the people out there are losing their flexibility. They're losing their ability to be able to control themselves. They're being turned into the cogs in the machine. They're being turned into the vassals. And they don't seem to, as you note, they have no frame of reference anymore because it's been so long since people. And again, that's one of the reasons why I try to speak out about the FCC. People just, again, they just coolly accept it. They accept that this is how it works. And, you know, Eric, I brought this up a little bit to you before. You know, my dad was a gearhead and, you know, worked in a garage as a teenager, ended up in his late 60s going back to work at Mr. Goodwrench when he lost his job. You know, he'd come back to have his coveralls and stuff. And I used to go onto the car and, you know, watch him as a little kid and stuff like that. My as I mentioned to you, one of my buddies, a couple members of his family became auto mechanics and stuff. And, it's fascinating because, to me, this connection to the technology, this connection to what is leverage, what does a gear do, what are the simple machines, these sorts of things, this understanding of what is at the heart of these things. There's a great book, The Way Things Work. It opens with the simple machines, right? Goes all the way into space travel and you know, having to get rid of the heat out in space and things like that. How do you do it? So all these things, to me, as technology has gotten better, it's become easier for people to survive and live without actually knowing some of the ways that things work. Now, we have a lot of people who really dig into computer programs, much like understanding the way the gears work and so on and so forth. But they don't dig into the political machinations and the principles behind individual liberty that are the basic machines for human interaction. They don't understand how those work. They're totally disconnected from those things.
Yeah, it's true.
They don't even understand that all of the blessings that we have, we stand on the shoulders of giants, and those giants aren't some grand philosophers. They're just people who engaged in resource discovery, in division of labor, and in trade. And that was it. That was all.
I think part of the reason for this has to do with the hyper organization and hyper socialization of people that has occurred over the past 30 years, I'd say.
Yes.
When
you and I
were kids, what happened after we got home from school, generally speaking?
We went outside.
We explored the neighborhood. We hung out with our friends. It was freestyle. You know, maybe you played a sport, but you weren't constantly going from one scripted activity to the next, to the next, to the next, such that you essentially had no free time to be on your own, to think and to develop and to learn the world and to acquire a sense of yourself as an individual who is competent as an individual to assess and deal with the external world. You know, now everything is about being part of a group and waiting to see what the group does and whatever the leader of the group tells you to do. That's what they've done. They've succeeded in collectivizing the culture.
Boy, let me hop over into the Rockfin chat and so on. And Eric, I don't want to keep you too long. Eric Peters is our guest, folks. And by the way, if you're listening to this later on the Free Talk Live broadcast across GCN, please visit Eric Peters' website because it is terrific. He's got videos embedded oftentimes. He does test drives of new car products, talks a lot about the dangers of EVs. He's been so on top of that stuff. The regulatory schema that has been thrown upon people, it's ericpetersautos.com. And, of course, follow him on Twitter at LibertarianCarG. And for those of you who are watching live, let me hop into Rockfin and Rumble, Eric, and offer folks the opportunity to join us in live chat with any concepts or ideas that they wanted to bring up and maybe I missed. Rockfin and Rumble, feel free to drop your comments in there. I'll give you just a couple seconds here. LT Oracle of Truth says, love Eric. Excellent, excellent. So right, so right. And Narrow Way, Narrow Gate, Narrow Gate Ministries on Rumble, Eric says, a horse, my kingdom for a horse.
Yep. Hey, speaking of that, I'm hoping I'm going to be able to do this tomorrow. It's all a question of being able to find the time. I've been promising I'm going to do this for days now, but I'm going to give my Trans Am's rear tires a Viking funeral.
Really?
Yep. They're old. They're 20 years old. They're practically bald. So the time has come to fry them down to the cords. And I've got a new set I'd show you right here sitting. I got a new set of tires right here that I'll mount afterwards. But I'm going to go out and just do a little mini tactical nuke burnout.
That'll be awesome. That'll be crazy. Yeah. No necklacing, though, right? No necklacing.
I'm a little curious.
Yeah. What's that?
I only burn tires, not people.
Yeah, I know. Winnie Mandela is not a neighbor, right?
No.
That's awesome. Are you going to get that on video, Eric? Are you going to shoot that?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. All right, so Audi MRR, Modern Retro Radio is there, and Taylor Saunders is there. He says, let me just check this over. My friend's truck told him to keep his eyes on the road. He was looking for an address and kept looking away. He didn't even know it was a program in the truck at all. I wonder what manufacturer that was. Thank you, Taylor, for that comment. And Jason Barker says, have fun cleaning all the rubber off the car, Eric.
I will.
You know, yeah, my friend who had the Chevelle, that's worth like $150,000 now, that very rare Chevelle. Yeah. I remember, man, outside high school, he would do brake stands. And you're like, oh, Kevin's out there doing another brake stand. It was crazy what he would do. He was a good driver, too. He was much like Dustin Hoffman. I'm a good driver. I'm definitely a good driver. I'm not sure if this is a question for Eric. Oh, yes, it is. So, Eric, Brian Taylor is in the Rockfin chat, and he says, what are Eric's thoughts about our constitutional system? What does he think about the anarchist perspective, voluntarist anarchist perspective?
Well, you know, anarchism and libertarianism, there's a lot of overlap there. And my best understanding of anarchism is essentially what it means literally, which is the absence of government. I'm all for that. You know, I prefer rules to government, rules enforced by social conventions. You know, if somebody comes over to my house, I don't like smoking in my house, so the rule is no smoking in my house. And if you want to smoke, go outside. That's the kind of anarchy that I favor. I don't like the government telling me that I cannot have or must have anything going on in my house because it's none of the government's business. It's my property. You know, I do understand as a practical matter that, you know, some degree of government may be necessary in this horrible world that we have to deal with sometimes. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, as a sellout. I'm just saying that I understand that position, but I don't think that that precludes aspiring to the ideal, which is the less government that we have, the better it will be for all of us.
And, you know, Eric, I was a long time ago, a man named Jim Davies used to write a lot for Strike the Root. He used to listen to a radio show that I did, older guy, great guy. And we used to get together and chat sometimes and stuff. And he pointed out, he said, look, the thing about the state is that the state says that you can't govern your life or you can't govern your interactions with others. He says that therefore negates the ability to create the state in the first place. It undercuts the very concept that people are capable of coming together to form something that will handle it. He goes, so we brought up, and yesterday I was talking about this, there's a court case that came out, I believe it was in, I'm not even sure now. Let me see if I can find it. It was a court case, was it Tennessee, where they claimed that a statute that would prohibit doctors from engaging in so-called gender-affirming care, that they could execute that prohibition on underage kids, that they say you can't do this on underage kids. And I said, look, you know, as this lends itself to the argument of about statism versus non-statism. If people think that, well, you know, we often hear from conservatives, parents should have control. But then the liberals will say, what if the parents agree that it's good to mutilate a child so that the child thinks that he or she is the opposite gender, the opposite sex? Then are you okay with that, conservatives? And that causes the conservatives some vexation. So they say, well, up to a certain age, we have to have some statutes that say that you can't abuse a child. You know, there's certain limits. Well, of course, the state is going to define those limits, and you get right back to the argument of what is allowable versus what is not allowable. And I said, look, at least the founders allowed for decentralization. At least they allowed for some sort of means to keep things smaller and escape. But one of the things I didn't mention was I said, look, to me, the answer for this is voluntary societies, because then you can have people in voluntary societies. Some people wonder whether people from one voluntary society will try to invade another because they think the kids have to be protected. Generally speaking, that doesn't really inspire people to go to all the trouble to engage in warfare. It's just not something that they do. The ancient Irish didn't do that sort of thing very much. And, of course, even in ancient England, which was much more voluntarist anarchist before they had the establishment of the very strong royal system, they had small chieftains. They had those people then sort of became kings, but they were chieftains and so on. It was all local. It was reputation. You got tossed out from the tribe. The chieftains would no longer acknowledge you, that sort of thing. But what struck me, and I didn't mention it last night, and I said, look, if people think that by allowing people to be free of the government apparatus, that somehow more children are going to be put in danger, that somehow the people closest to the kids, who care most about the kids, will somehow not care enough that you need the state, then how is it that those very same people can create a state which is distanced from them, as bureaucrats working regardless of the satisfaction people have, has a judicial apparatus that is virtually unanswerable, and how is it that that's going to do any better, right?
And
I think that if we do believe that the state is a reflection of how much people care, even with that crazy stuff that you can bring up and say, look, you know, let's eliminate all those questions. Let's just say it operates perfectly. Well, then you don't need the state, because people can do it themselves, which is what Jim Davies brought up to me. He says, look, if you want to protect kids and you say the state's got to form these kid protection things, then you're saying that people care enough, or either you're saying people don't care enough and the state has to protect the kids, which means that the state would never do this because the people wouldn't care enough to have the state do it. Or you are saying that the people do care enough, parents do care enough, and then you don't need the state. They can come up with our own voluntary systems, just like we have for quality control on all sorts of stuff. And they keep stealing from us all the time.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. And there's a question begged, or a false premise, or however you'd like to put it, that's at the root, I think, of this entire discussion, which is that somehow all risk can be eliminated. And that's absurd. You're not going to eliminate all risk.
Yeah. There's more Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live coming up.
This is an urgent warning. America is heading for another major financial disaster at an alarming rate. We could see stock prices fall as much as 50%, but this time the crash could be more violent and come faster than you ever imagined. We are Advantage Gold, America's most trusted precious metals company, and we are here to sound the alarm that winter is coming for investors. And now is the time to take actions that may help protect and secure your portfolio with physical precious metals. Want to help protect your hard-earned money before it's too late? Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000 and request our free gold and silver survival kit today. Mention that you heard us on the radio and learn how you could get up to $1,000 in free silver coins. The number is 800-900-8000. Call now to get your free survival kit and see if you qualify for $1,000 in free silver today.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Check with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
USA News Update. There's an online petition urging Senators Mitt Romney of Utah and Joe Manchin of West Virginia to form a bipartisan presidential ticket. The draft Romney-Manchin committee initiated the petition, emphasizing the need for leaders who can bridge political extremes. President Biden sat down with the president of Mexico during a bilateral meeting Friday in San Francisco.
Nothing is beyond our reach, in my view. I really mean it. When Mexico and the United States stand together and work together, as we've been doing.
President Biden said that the two nations are working together to tackle long-standing migration issues and combat the trafficking of fentanyl. The Thanksgiving travel season kicked off Friday, and it is anticipated to be one of the busiest in history. AAA projecting that over 55 million Americans will travel 50 miles or more for Thanksgiving this year, marking a slightly over 2% increase from last year. John Schaefer, USA News.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live. Free Talk Live.
It's Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find the Liberty Conspiracy live streaming every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rumble and Rockfin and my Twitter at Gard Goldsmith, G-A-R-D Goldsmith. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, your host, and I appreciate you being interested in the principles of individual liberty. Please spread the word. It's time for the Star Trek Mind Meld.
Doctor, our minds are one. I feel what you feel. I know what you know.
Oh, man. It is time, folks, for the Mind Meld with Toby Leary. And Toby Leary texted me. I got to glance at the phone. I surreptitiously glanced at the phone. Sort of like peaches when they come in that heavy syrup. I surreptitiously glanced at the phone, and the man from Hyannis, not the man from Atlantis, no, Patrick Duffy is not in the house. We got somebody who believes in freedom. I don't know, maybe Patrick Duffy believes in freedom. He is the man from Hyannis. He is, of course, Toby Leary from Cape Gunworks. Toby, thanks for joining us. I really appreciate it. And you texted, too. That was so cool. It was like a bonus for me. Thanks so much, Toby. Thanks for joining the show.
No problem. I'm glad to be here, Gard, and I'm sorry. I don't have much time. I got to get my daughter to a babysitting appointment. So, but I'm here while I can be here, and We'll do it again sometime.
Definitely, absolutely. I wanted to mention to you right off the bat, Toby, just a nice positive breaking story that I got to see out of Michigan. I want to show this to you, and you might have already seen this, so I might not be showing you anything new, but I saw this, came out 4 hours ago. A lot of the people up in Michigan and Wisconsin are starting to do these little enclaves who they're starting to call up their militias or, you know, speak more about militias or the idea of local control. And we see this one from the Daily Mail. Of course, got a report from England to get this one. Holton Township, Michigan, establishes its own militia to protect Second Amendment and declares it will not enforce new red flag laws restricting gun ownership. And so I don't know if you've seen that one, but of course, we have a darker story to discuss coming right up.
I have not. No, that's news to me. I haven't really paid attention to the news much today because I had endless meetings and customers and whatnot. So I'm way behind the eight ball.
I'm looking forward to getting into that a little bit more and also discussing with you what you're going to be planning on the state level, because we know on the state level, facets of what we're going to be discussing about Liz Warren for the next couple minutes before you have to fly are actually folded into the Massachusetts legislation that you were successful in putting off. It's not dead. But let's bring this story up, folks, for the audience. If you're familiar, it is, I'll show you the bill is S-3223. It's called the Ammo, how quaint, the Ammo Act. And we've got the PR from Liz Warren's tax-funded website, where she says, U.S. Senators Elizabeth Warren, Richard, call me Vietnam vet, although I never went, Blumenthal, and of Connecticut, and representatives, so-called representatives, they don't represent anybody, it's impossible mathematically, Robert Garcia, Democratic California, and Debbie Trust Me Schultz, Wasserman, sorry, I always get that wrong. I don't know what it is, Toby. When I see Wasserman, I always say, Debbie, trust me. I don't know what the problem is. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who really was a star when Thomas Massie exposed her a couple days ago about the automobile shutoff switch, introduced their Ammunition Modernization and Monitoring Oversight Act. So I guess I guess there's a basement room in the Congress where they can go to pick out these anagrams. It's called the Ammo Act, of course. And this is just amazing when it comes to background checks, federal firearms licenses, no ability to be able to actually buy or trade ammunition. Tell us a little bit about this, even record keeping, contrary to the Fourth Amendment. Toby, what's your take on this right now? It's just been proposed over the past week or so.
Yeah, it's the typical death by a thousand cuts approach that the anti-gun left and anti-gunners in general have been taking this approach for 30 or 40 years, maybe even longer now. And so after the Bruin case that came out June of 2022, they realized their days are numbered. The gun control days are numbered. So ammunition is obviously a protected arm under the Second Amendment, just like magazines are. And they hope that they'll be able to pass this and use the age-old common sense gun control, like, or gun safety type of bill. Like, doesn't it make sense, Guard, that you wouldn't be able to buy ammunition for somebody else? Doesn't it make sense that you shouldn't be able to hoard stockpiles of ammunition? What good is that? Nobody
needs all that ammunition. And it's all defined by them. Common sense, hoarding, stockpiles. Right. It's so insufferable. The conceit and arrogance of these people, even as they tell you they're doing it for your own good, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. It's your own good, your own safety. We just want to keep everyone safe. And it's common sense and nobody needs and fill in the blank to any other ism that they've come out with in the past 30, 40 years.
Right.
And it's a retread of old tactics. It's not going to stand the test of time constitutionally. They know that, but they do it anyway. And that's unfortunate because they would rather spend your money, your time, your life having to defend and claw back your rights that continually get taken away from these anti-Second Amendment, anti-civil rights senators and representatives. And the bottom line is it won't stand judicial scrutiny, maybe to the point where if it does somehow pass the House of Representatives, it may pass the Senate. It is gaining some steam. There's other senators that have signed on to it. But
yeah,
if it was able to pass both and Biden signed it into law, then it may even just have a preliminary injunction. It is that egregious of a anti-civil rights, anti-Second Amendment law. But nevertheless, they're going to try. They're going to throw anything they got at the wall and hope it sticks. If it delays or encumbers the Second Amendment in any way, shape, or form, they are in favor of it. And they would love nothing more than to tie us up in court for decades and decades to come so that we have to – it's the opposite of the American system that has been set up, which is A, you're innocent until proven guilty, or B, in this case – this is a right that is enumerated by the Constitution, and the only way government can restrict it is if they are given explicit authority and power to do so. They have the power because that's the nature of their business, but they lack constitutional authority. There is nothing in the text of the Second Amendment. There is nothing in the historical analog of our country's nation at the time of the ratification in 1791 that would substantiate or that would uphold this type of legislation. It will fail miserably and go to the ash heap of where all other bad bills have gone to go, and as it should. The problem is they know this and they do it anyway.
Right, and it's possible that maybe some of these people are going to sign on to this because they know it's not going to stick. They're throwing stuff up there, but they want to use it for political purposes when they try to run again. They've got constituencies that say, oh, I tried, but we had the blockage from the NRA. Whatever the purposes are, they're playing with our rights. They're playing chicken with our rights, and they're going to go over the side. Let's run through, Toby, if we can, how, if this is challenged, if this passes and then it's challenged, a couple of the sequences based on the Bruin decision, what the different levels of analysis are for these types of proposals and how they're trying to squeeze this in with ammunition, but it'll still run through the same sort of analyses based on the Bruin precedent.
Yeah, it's actually the Heller precedent that really is the standard that Bruin reaffirmed as good law. And Mark Smith from Four Boxes Diner has done a lot of videos on this that really spells it out from a high level of technical law. He's a constitutional scholar, if you will, and a member of the Supreme Court Bar Association. And he really operates at a very high level. But basically, the way it works is the Heller mandate, the Heller case back in 2008, we just celebrated the 15th anniversary of Heller.
Yeah.
Did the historical analysis of when is the period of time the Second Amendment should be referenced for, any type of historical analysis dealing with the text first. And if it's not in the text, so if there's nothing in the text that would allow you to pass whatever law it is you're about to pass, then now the burden shifts to the government to prove that it was consistent with the historical analysis or the history of our country at the time of the Second Amendment's ratification in 1791.
Now, Toby, just to jump in there, I do want to mention the one thing that I have a slight problem with that, because as you've seen and as I've seen, it should just be the text. That's it, right? It should just be the text, and if they want to change it, but you can see where they sort of try to give a little bit and say, well, at the time, can we understand the text better if this was being done and so on? But the problem is you can find instances where people did make mistakes after 1791, after in the 1800s when they did make mistakes, and people can say, well, there's a historical precedent. You see, they went up against the Second Amendment, but those were mistakes. And even if they're they're upheld by courts, even if it's upheld, nobody has a moral authority to tell me I can't arm myself. So I figured I would just mention that, because there is room occasionally for these lawyers to try to find some example and say, well, that was done, even though it actually runs contrary to the explicit wording of the Second Amendment.
Yeah, and it's important to note that, though, Gard, because this is, and again, it's a very high-level, technical level, because if it didn't point to that, then you could say, well, the Second Amendment gives you the right to murder people. Well, no, it doesn't. And the right. And the they dealt with that at the time of the ratification in 1791 was murder was illegal, didn't matter what you used. But the Second Amendment wasn't all of a sudden this permission slip to do things that were contrary to natural law. Right. So it's very important to reference A, 1791, and B, what the restrictions were historically on the Second Amendment. So it wasn't the same type of restrictions that they're proffering now. It was, if a violent person had access to firearms, they did disarm them. That was a thing. And most people are like, okay, that's a good thing. If this guy is a career criminal, he's going to commit violence. Yeah, disarm him. And the best way they disarmed him was to lock him in jail.
Right.
So by locking them in jail, they deprived them of all kinds of rights, the right to vote, the right to bear arms, the right to peacefully assemble. I guess you could peacefully assemble in a jail cell. But the point I'm trying to make is there was a deprivation of rights, but it was through due process of law. That's what the Fifth Amendment protects us of.
And that's very important.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to jump in, but a lot of people might say, well, you see, this would allow for red flag laws. It's like, no, here's the deal. Just as it was up in Maine, if you've got an example of somebody who's brandishing a firearm in a criminally threatening way, then you have reason to arrest that person, get them away, and put them in a place where now the judicial process will begin and they can be charged with a crime. If after due process they're found to have not to have been erroneously charged, then, you know, they get a speedy trial, they get a jury and so on and so forth, then they're released. The minute they're back out there, and this is the problem I have with the 68 Gun Control Act, anybody who's outside of a prison should be able to keep and bear arms. It's utterly ridiculous that suddenly they say, well, you're safe enough to be outside of prison, but not safe enough to actually exercise the right that you had before you went into prison. If that person's not safe enough, they should still be in jail.
I agree 100%.
Prison.
And there's a ton of cases that are dealing with that very issue right now. There's a Brian Range case and one that was just adjudicated 2 days ago, I believe, in Texas. And there's also the one that's before the Supreme Court right now, the Rahimi case. But not to get down that rabbit trail, the Heller doctrine analyzed through our historical analysis what the right to keep and bear arms meant as of the ratification of 1791. Where Bruin came in and affirmed that is good law. And what that meant for all intents and purposes is that you cannot ban any arm that is in common and ordinary use. Doesn't matter what the arm is, if it's in common and ordinary use. So basically, any and all modern gun, pistol, rifle, shotgun, whatever you want to call it, assault weapon, and the ammunition and the magazines that support that are in common and ordinary use, so therefore they cannot be banned, period, without the government doing its due diligence to show at the time of the ratification that, you know, it was in the text, the history, or the tradition of our country to do so.
Right.
So they don't have that on their side. Where Bruin really comes in is it took away the you mentioned the mistakes in the past. That was all done on an interest balancing, tiers of scrutiny, two-step level of scrutiny approach to gun laws. So basically, it would say, oh, it's in the interest of the people. The legislature has passed this. They want it. So give it to them. And many mistakes were made along the way of doing that. But the Bruin case said, no, 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 no. you must go back to the text, history, and tradition, or you don't get it. If it's not in there, throw it out. It's a bad law. It can't be passed. It can't be upheld. The courts must throw it out. And that's the big difference between Heller and Bruin. Heller, they didn't do that. They did the text analysis and the history and the tradition analysis, but they stopped short of informing the lower courts that a two-step process is still allowed, unallowed.
Right.
They did that in Bruin. They set that right. straight, and they said no longer can you take a two-step interest balancing, tiers of scrutiny approach to the Second Amendment. It is an enumerated right. And just like any other right, it is subject to the same set of standards that all other rights are afforded.
And exactly.
You can't treat it any different. It's not the redheaded stepchild of the rights world. It's not the one that says, you know, you get to make up the rules as you go. And it's not the one that says common sense or whatever fill in the blankism you want to put there. Nope. Clarence Thomas set the record straight and said, the two-step approach is one step too many. You must use strict scrutiny when dealing with the Second Amendment. So all gun control is on the table. It's on the chopping block. Its days are numbered, and everybody knows it.
Yeah, and I think these people are desperate. As I'll bring this back up on the screen, we got Warren, Blumenthal, Garcia on the representative side, Schultz from Florida, of course, and many others on the hardcore collectivist side. And I think you're right. You know, many years ago, you remember Benson's Wild Animal Farm in southern New Hampshire, Toby?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you were. Yeah, so it was in Hudson, I think. I was there, and it's closed up now as a park there, and they had a chimp there, and he was throwing his own poop at the glass. Maybe at the people standing in front of the glass, you know, maybe he was not too happy being inside that glass container. And that's the way I see these people. They're throwing poop at us, and they're just trying to see what sticks. And although personally, you know, not even personally, I think just logically and morally, the word, the phrase shall not be infringed has no contingencies on it. I do like the standard better of the Bruin standard than what has already, you know, been established. And I think that it is causing just endless vexation for these people, which is one of the reasons why they want to overturn the number of people who are conservatives on the court, so-called conservatives on the court. And so it looks like this will probably go the same way, Toby. I'll leave it with this. They've got these little pieces in here where they say they're going to require data sharing on ammunition sales. They're going to say that it will so-called restrict individuals from purchasing ammunition to then sell illegally to others. Again, there's an assumption there that there can be an illegal sale of ammunition. I bring this up. Does the possession of an item connote aggressive action against someone? Is it an aggressive act? No, right? Is it a criminal act against someone to own something? No. Does anyone know intent of buying ammunition? No, nobody can actually know why that person might want to buy that. And yet these people are the ones who point their government guns at us for this process. So it's definitely going to be a very big deal for them politically and rhetorically. But again, I think you're right. Even if it does pass, it's not going to pass muster. We've got invasion of the Fourth Amendment. We've got the businesses, of course. They say businesses are not required to possess licenses in order to sell ammunition and can sell to any buyer in any quantity without a background check and with no record keeping or data. Well, that's something they want to change. So you already have to deal with this sort of stuff. And in Massachusetts, they tried to do this sort of thing. So you feel pretty confident that this thing is not going to be able to stand muster down the line.
It won't. But the problem is, again, that, you know, we constantly have to get on the defensive.
Yeah.
Hire attorneys, pay money to claw back our rights when somebody needs to figure out a way. It's someone smarter than me. How to charge these people with malfeasance for the dereliction of their duty, because under Title 18 U.S. Code, Section 242, they are depriving Americans of their rights, which there is a very harsh crime for the deprivation of rights. And they're doing it knowingly and willingly, and they're breaking their oath of office while doing it. So they swear an oath to uphold the Constitution against all enemies, both foreign and domestic. Then they enter into their chambers and shake hands and make backroom deals in a way to deprive you of that right. And then they go out and they vote for it. And it is an absolute abomination, and they should be held personally and severably liable. They should be able to be sued for the deprivation of your rights and my rights. They should also look at the full extent of that law, that Title 18, Section 242 of the U.S. Code. It actually, if somebody's life is lost while that government official under the color of law is depriving you of that right, you can get the death penalty. And I would love to see people who think they're so smart and they're sitting up there in their ivory towers in their moral, high ground, as they like to see it, look down their nose at you and I, because we choose to defend our families and protect ourselves with arms that are constitutionally protected. And they want to take that away and deprive us and tell us where we can and can't carry. And if somebody's life is lost as a result of them under their color of law, them depriving me of that right, then they should suffer the consequences of violation of Section 242 of Title 18 U.S. Code.
Toby, thank you so much for joining us. I know you've got to fly. You're awesome.
Sir.
And thank you also. You know, we can look at the consequential side of this, which is that the possession of firearms reduces the greater number of firearms in a civilian zone. You get a greater reduction in violent crime. It's been shown, cross-culturally, nation to nation, state. They've done comparisons, even county to county, as John Lott has done. But you hit the moral and the constitutional sides of it. And I so appreciate you doing that. That is absolutely essential. And I want to remind people they can go to CapeGunWorks.com, find out what you do. You're located in Hyannis. And they can also listen to your program, Rapid Fire. Last point, when can they listen to it before you go?
We're on every Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. You can go to rapidfireradio.us and sign up to be notified whenever we go live, because sometimes we change days and times. So I would definitely sign up there. So thank you, sir. I do have to run. I appreciate your guard. And
we'll
do it again
soon. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Awesome stuff from Toby Leary. We got an outgoing theme for him. And what's this? It's Radio Birdman with Smith & Wesson Blues. It's Liberty Conspiracy on Free Talk Live. Find the Liberty Conspiracy live streaming every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. on Rumble and Rockfin and my Twitter at Guard Gold.
It's obvious the unthinkable is happening. With all the recent media distractions, most folks never saw it coming. But a few did. Their guts told them something very wrong was going on. And now the headlines are proving them right. The people in charge keep telling you that everything's fine and to stop noticing. But you know better. Folks are investing in emergency food storage. And you should, too. My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, are the ones you can trust. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one for each family member. My Patriot Supply also sells biomass stoves, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, gravity-powered water filters, heirloom seeds, and survival gear that may come in handy soon. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com today. It's time to prepare for what's coming. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A 1-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.